lived near Maple Creek. He was long and lean and tough, a level head and a steady hand, and a wizard with a puck. And once across the blue line, oh, he never let you down. You could tell by the look in his cold black eyes, that boy was glory bound. He could bring a hometown to its feet with a goal in overtime. The scouts had pegged him sure enough, it was just a matter of time. There was any justice in this world, he'd be picked in the second round. 'Cause he had the goods, there was no denying that boy was glory bound. One afternoon before a game, I stopped by Johnny's place, my father's car, and a feeling in my heart that night we'd take first place. But there was something that he'd left behind, he'd fetch it back in town. Never dreamt it at the time that fate would strike him down. Oh, if on the mountains when it didn't show, found him in a ditch between here and Shaunavon. Roof caved in and it's 50 below. Sirens wail and the blizzard blows. Ah! Well, Johnny died young, but I grew old, and since that time I've come to think, when I see his name engraved on trophies or his picture in a case in the kinsman's rink, somehow slipped the bonds of time, he's gained himself renown. And I've started on that slow slide back, but he's forever glory bound. Yeah, I've started on that slow slide back, but he's forever glory bound.
That's James Keelahan with Glory Bound from History, the First 25 Years, his wonderful compilation that came out in 2013 on Borealis Records. James Keelahan is one of Canada's finest singer-songwriters, and he'll be in Guelph on Friday, January the 15th for a Borealis Music Series show in the Co-operators Hall at the Riverrun Centre. We caught up with James on the road in Kingston. How are you doing today, James?
I'm doing good. How are you, Jen?
Wonderful. I'm very much looking forward to your trip to Guelph. It's always great to have you playing a show. I wanted to start by maybe talking a little bit about where you are with your career. I know you're now the artistic director with the Summer Folk Festival. We'll talk a little bit about that a little later. But you're also still, I think, pretty active on the touring circuit. I know I saw you last year with Men at Words, with Archie Fisher and Jez Lowe. Absolutely fabulous show. Just give us an update of where you're at with your own music.
Well, I'm sort of in between things. I'm taking a little time off the road this winter to do some writing, because I feel it's time for a new CD. So this winter is all going to be about writing and creating new music. I'm still doing gigs, but just sort of doing really kind of special gigs for the next little while. Going across to do the Connections Festival in Glasgow the week after I do the show in Guelph. So yeah, Guelph and Kitchener-Waterloo are the only two Ontario shows really for a while. Teaching a music camp in Haliburton in March, winter music camp. I'll be down teaching music camp at Folk Alliance in Kansas City in February. So yeah, I mean, that doesn't, for most people, that doesn't sound like I've come off the road, but in fact, that's sort of coming off the road for me.
And I should mention that as well as the show in Guelph, on the 15th of January, you will be at the Registry in Kitchener on January the 30th. So we'll have that information on the website as well. Tell us a little bit about what people can expect when they come to a James Keelahan show.
Well, I'm going to be, for the show in Guelph, I'm going to be bringing my friend Hugh McMillan with me. And people will know Hugh from his other main gig, which is Spirit of the West. He's been the bass player in Spirit of the West for well nigh these past almost 30 years. And what you get is an evening of high energy music and storytelling, because I tend to like to kind of rock it out, but I also like to tell stories when I'm not doing that. So it's an evening that's about the voice and about stories and about the way history kind of affects our lives. That all laid over a swath of musicality brought by my friend Hugh McMillan.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because one of the things I love about your shows is how effortless it seems, the way that you go back from, you know, go back and forward between songs and stories. You seem like you have an incredible amount of fun up there. Has it always been like that for performing?
Yeah, it has been. Performing to me has always been a ride. I mean, I still get nervous, you know, before a show the way that really anybody does. But it's such a rush. And you know, Hugh and I, especially, you know, when I'm playing with either Hugh or with David Woodhead, we've played together for so long that we don't even really make a set list, because the guys, you know, sort of know all the material. And I can just sort of turn on a dime and say, oh, we're going to do this one at this point, or we're going to do this one. And so each show is, you know, slightly different than the show that went before, because you know, there's, you know, obviously 11 or 12 CDs worth of stuff to draw on in terms of material. And if you're lucky, you can get in like 16 or 17 songs in an evening of music. So a lot of times it depends on how we're feeling on a given night, which way the set's going to go.
You mentioned that you'll be teaching at the Winter Folk Camp in Haliburton. I'm curious about your songwriting style. You've written so many wonderful songs over the years. Do you find it very easy to find material to write about?
Yeah, I for the historical stuff, for the story songs, that kind of stuff is easy to find and is pretty well to hand. When you're writing more about your personal life, I think that it gets harder, because that's more in there. You can't cloak it in the voice of the character. It's got to be your own voice. And for me, writing personal stuff is way harder than writing the historical stuff. But then I have this thing where, because the story songs are there and you sort of got a story or storyline in place, sometimes they're easy enough that I don't really find them a challenge. And so I tend to stay away from them because they're not challenging me, which is a very odd thing to do. But you know, I'll get over it.
Now, you mentioned that you're taking a little time off the road, although as you also pointed out, you're still very busy. You're also the artistic director at Summerfolk, and I just saw a note that came through just in the last few days to say that you have committed to that position for a little while longer. Can you talk about that? And also, I'm going to give you a chance to just put out a little teaser for the coming Summerfolk, because there's already a couple of artists that I would love to see that will be on the program. So let's talk a little bit about being an artistic director, what that means to you.
It means that in the case of Owen Sound, it was a festival that I loved. It was one of the first festivals that I ever played outside of my home province. It was one of the first festivals that ever hired me as me outside of my own province. And so I've been going to Owen Sound one way or another since 1984. And so when the job came up, I was really intrigued by the job. And like I say, I'd been wanting to take a little bit more time off the road. I figured that I'd be able to do that and the road job as well. But the Phil Klein, Mitch Podolak kind of model, where the workshops are as important as the main stage, and where it's important for the musicians to get together, that you try not to have situations where there's musicians coming in, playing their gig, and then leaving. You try and get them to come for the whole weekend. And what's amazing to me that happens, that still happens at Owen Sound, and well, I think one of the best examples was a couple of years ago, I had both Beppe Gambetta and Tony McManus at the festival as separate individuals. But because there's so, you're a little bit limited in terms of how many people you can get on the main stage, on the amphitheater stage, that I proposed to Tony and Beppe that I wanted to put them together on the main stage, basically to do like a guitar workshop on the main stage, which they were game for. They walked off the stage, and Grit Laskin ran up and said, you guys have got to record an album. And so they did. So, you know, there's this album that came out of a workshop that they did at Owen Sound. And musicians, uniformly, this happens all the time at Owen Sound. You know, new bands are created or new associations are created, and you see people who had been jamming together in the lobby of the hotel like a year later appearing on each other's albums or writing together or doing special projects together. It's a really special festival in that way, in that there's no barriers between the performers, and there are very little barriers between the performers and the audience.
Oh, it's certainly a wonderful festival. Tell us a little bit about what's happening this coming summer. I know you've already made a couple of announcements, and you have a couple others that you can share with us today.
Yeah, well, we've announced Bruce Coburn. We've announced Big Little Lions, who are this fantastic duo. They're from Ohio and Vancouver Island. They've been writing by remote. But they write these really beautiful, catchy, meaningful pop songs. And I'm a huge fan of pop music. And when you get pop music that's also sort of intelligent and actually speaks about real things, then I think that makes it even better. So the Big Little Lions will be joining us. We'll be in the next couple of days, we'll be announcing Lindy Ortega will be joining us at the festival. Somebody I've been wanting to get up there for a couple of years, and I think she's going to ignite the crowd. We've got the East Pointers from Charlottetown, PEI, coming out. One of the real new wave of traditional performers coming out of the East Coast. Last year we had the group Coeg, and who are again one of these young bands who are rewriting the tradition. So the East Pointers are certainly starting to rewrite the tradition. So fantastic traditional group.
It looks like it's going to be a fabulous festival.
Oh, yeah.
If people want to learn more about Summer Folk and perhaps get on your mailing list, how can they do that?
Best thing to do is to head over to summerfolk.org, and you can find all the information there. You can find the places to get on the mailing list. You can find ticket information. As we add performers to the festival, they all go up on the performers page. There's information there about camping, just all kinds of stuff.
And what are the dates for Summer Folk this coming summer?
It is August 19th, 20th, and 21st.
That's wonderful. Okay, let's get back to the show in Guelph. As I mentioned at the start of this interview, James Keelahan will be in Guelph for a show in the Cooperators Hall at the Riverrun Centre on Friday, January the 15th. If you want to get information and buy tickets, you can head to riverrun.ca or head to our website at folkrootsradio.com. We're going to finish with another song from the History album, James. You selected Kiri's Piano, which has a wonderful story to it. Do you want to share that with us?
Well, it's a story that came to me through my sister. It's about the grandmother of a husband of one of my sister's friends. And it's about the Japanese internment during the Second World War in this country. And it's a really engaging story about a woman and her piano and what happened when the time came for her to be interned. And the thing that I love about the story songs is if I've told a story properly or if I've told a story in such a way that it actually touches people, the story songs head off to collect their own stories and send those stories back to me. And this song, probably more than anything else I've written, has done that. I know a number of children that have been named after this song. The song is now part of the permanent exhibit in the Museum of Human Rights in Winnipeg. There's a film made from the song last year. Somebody ended up giving me a guitar that was sunk at Pearl Harbor, as long as I promised to play the song at least once a year on that guitar. It's just amazing how this song has affected people.
The perfect way to finish this interview. This is James Keelahan with Kiri's Piano from the wonderful compilation album History, the First 25 Years. And James, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
And the pleasure is indeed mine. Thanks so much for talking to me, James.
You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
Of all of Kirito's joys, the thing she loved the best was to play her prized piano when the sun had gone to rest. I used to hear the notes drift down along the silent water as Kiri played the notes and scales for her dear sons and daughters. Now me, I played piano, but not as good as Kiri. She went in for that long-haired stuff, but my, she played it pretty. The old piano had a tone that set my heart to aching. It always sounded sweetest, though, when it was Kiri playing. In December, when the Seventh Fleet was turned to smoke and ashes, the order came to confiscate their fishing boats and caches. And Kiri's husband forced to go and work in labor camps. And Kiri left alone to fend and hold the fort as best she can. But the music did not drift as often from up the cove at Kiri's house. And when it did, it sounded haunted, played with worry, played with doubt. For Kiri knew that soon she too would be compelled to leave, and the old upright would stay behind, and Kiri, she would grieve. I loaded Kiri on the bus with stoic internees. The crime that they were guilty of was that they were not like me. And if I was ashamed, I didn't know it at the time. They were flotsam on the wave of war. They were no friends of mine. I went up to Kiri's house to tag all their belongings and set them out for auctioneers who'd claim them in the morning. One piece that I thought I'd keep and hold back for myself was that haunting ivory upright that Kiri played so well. Kiri had not left it there for me to take as plunder. She'd rolled it down onto the dock and on into the harbor. The old upright in strangers' hands was a thought she couldn't bear. So she consigned it to the sea to settle the affair. So many years have come and gone since Kiri's relocation. I look back now upon that time with shame and resignation. For Kiri knew what I did not, that if we must be free, Then sometimes we must sacrifice to gain our dignity. Yes, Kiri knew what I did not, that if we must be free, then sometimes we must sacrifice to gain